Tired of having teachers snatch your precious iPod and mobile phone? Then welcome to iHistory, where the stories of yesterday and the technology of today come together. Bendigo's Chinese history is something that we know everything about and nothing about. At every Easter show in Bendigo, Sun Lung, the Chinese dragon, gets dusted off and comes alive with the help of dozens of volunteers who walk the dragon down High Street. Most of us have been to the Golden Dragon Museum, and some of us perhaps even have a Chinese ancestor in our past. But what do we really know about the thousands of Chinese people that migrated here in the 1850s? For starters, why did they come here? That's pretty obvious. Gold. But they were different to the average gold seeker from England or America. Those diggers were motivated by the thrill of adventure, of seeking the big strike. In contrast, most Chinese diggers were here for economic reasons. Their culture frowned upon leaving their homeland, so they had another reason for coming. This is a quote from the Life After Gold exhibition. Western influences were taking hold of China, creating hardship, turmoil, and change amongst a population that had followed a continuous Chinese culture of over 3,000 years. Desperate to support themselves and their families, Chinese menfolk turned to these new opportunities to visit foreign shores to seek their fortunes. In other words, things were pretty tough in China at the moment, and so that forced the Chinese to look overseas for income. Usually they were sponsored by Chinese businessmen who would support their family as long as they sent gold back to China. Second of all, how did they get here? If it was hard to leave China because of cultural reasons, it was also hard to get into Australia. The Victorian government of the day was worried about the large numbers of Chinese miners. Why were they worried? It was a mix of racist and employment reasons. They were worried that the Chinese would take jobs that white people might have. One nice bloke, John Pascoe Faulkner, said the government should, to quote, prevent the goldfields of Australia from becoming the property of the Emperor of China and of the Mongolian and Tatar hordes of Asia, end quote. So what did they do? They slapped a £10 tax on every Chinese immigrant who landed in Melbourne, which the ship owners had to pay. The ship owners didn't want to pay this, so they shipped the Chinese to South Australia, where there was no tax. The Chinese miners then walked with all their gear to the goldfields. They also had to pay a license fee, which meant the Chinese had to pay an extra pound tax every 2 months and also prove that they'd paid the £10 tax on entry. Also, if someone else illegally took over a mining claim of the Chinese couldn't take them to court. The Chinese didn't take this treatment lying down. On one occasion in 1859, in White Hills in Bendigo, some Chinese miners without a license were arrested. Huge numbers of Chinese miners ran to the police and gave themselves up to be arrested, saying they also did not have licenses. The police couldn't arrest so many people and chose to take them into town. However, more miners joined the Chinese and the event turned into a farce. This prejudice against the Chinese led to one of the first laws passed by the Australian government when it began in 1901. They felt that the most important thing they could do as a new country was to keep out people who weren't white. These laws were the Pacific Islander Act and the Immigration Restriction Act, which together made up what we now call the White Australia Policy. The idea that Australia was mainly for white people who spoke English. What has this got to do with the Chinese? Well, remember how the government was worried about the large numbers of Chinese arriving in Australia? People had similar views, including Henry Parkes, one of the people who united the different states into one nation. He believed that the further immigration of Chinese would lead to, quote, future discord, anarchy, and civil war, end quote. Others, such as W. Russell, reckoned that they were an inferior race. John Quick, a Bendigo boy who became a judge, reckoned that Australian law should be able to stop people becoming citizens who were from an undesirable race, as he put it. So, the anti-Chinese feeling was the first step along the way of illegally restricting who comes into Australia on the basis of the ethnic group that they're a part of. The Chinese didn't just have to deal with the extra taxes that no one else had to pay, or unjust laws. Sometimes they had to resist open violence from European miners. Buckland River, Ararat, and Lambing Flat were all places where anti-Chinese feeling spilled over into violence. The Chinese in Bendigo mainly lived around the White Hills and Emu Point areas. Most of them left as the alluvial gold ran out, but many stayed on, starting businesses such as furniture making, laundries, practicing Chinese herbal medicine, and market gardening. Where the Joss House now stands, there were many market gardens. There are also current reminders of the presence of a Chinese community in Bendigo. One of these is the kiln at Pepper Green Farm just below the Joss House on Finn Street. It was constructed to bake bricks for construction. Archaeologists have also unearthed clay jars used to store food, farming implements, as well as pieces of blue china bowls decorated with painted figures complete with a maker's stamp on the bottom. Another marker of Chinese heritage is the White Hills Cemetery, in which many Chinese people were buried. Of course, one of the most visible reminders of Chinese heritage is the Joss House. That's all for now. You have a list of evidence that you need to be gathering. Get to it.